Hello, hello, hello. Welcome to the fill-in segment. My name is Ruby Raven, and we are on the ancestral unceded territories of the Musqueam people in what is colonially known as Vancouver. Today I have with me here my roommate and bestie, Leva Becci. Hello.
Hello. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for being here. And Oren's also here.
Hey.
And I'm literally here today just to practice being live on air. I normally have a show at this time called Not My First Schmodio or Not My First Schmodio. I haven't decided where I want the intonation to be yet.
It changes the meaning.
Yeah, it does. I know the intonation is going to be somewhere. Mm-hmm. So I'm literally just practicing being live. And it works really well because my show is all about embracing embarrassing yourself, and so I think that this fill-in is going to be really on brand for me because I think it's just going to be a series of personal blunders.
Says the most graceful host ever.
Wow, thank you. So we are gonna kick this fill-in off with a PSA and a song, and Leva and I will be right back in a second. Wait.
Oh. We're finding
listening to CITR 101.9, broadcasting from UBC's Point Grey campus, located on the traditional, unceded Coast Salish territory of the Hunkaminam speaking Musqueam people.
Nisiyam, Nisiyaya, Thikum Queen Ansep, Hydra CM, Nisiyam, Nisiyaya, and the Skakuya, Talitin, Homasqueam, Mustail.
Oh my lord, I need a creative outlet. How on earth can I channel everything that's inside of me?
You know you can do that at CITR and Discorder, right?
Pardon me?
Yeah, you can illustrate for Discorder magazine or take photographs of events and artists, and they can teach you how to use Photoshop in their media lab.
That is so exhilarating. It fills my soul with lightning.
Yeah, just email volunteer@citr.ca and they can help you get started or just come into the station whenever.
I wouldn't miss it for the world.
Same place we speak.
the fill-in with Ruby and Leva. Ruby and Leva doing quirky stuff. Yeah, so we're back, and I have Leva here. She is one of the most amazing people ever to exist.
Oh,
and
my heart.
So I guess this is going to be me interviewing you, which I'm really excited to do.
I'm so honored.
Wait, I just want to talk.
I'm so honored.
Okay, yeah, you're on mic four, so this is the good mic.
Amazing. See, we've got it all under control.
You guys, I was really nervous. I'm not, as they say, a techie. My eyes tend to glaze over a little bit, and I try to focus really hard on this stuff because it doesn't come naturally to me. So I'm really happy. Thank you to the one person listening right now who is cheering me on.
Driving home at golden hour.
Yeah. So, Leva, you grew up in
Seychelles.
I got nervous. I know you grew up in Seychelles. And you are of Farzine and Sandra.
I am, as they say, the fruit of their loins.
Ew.
Ew. I hate that when they say that, but...
But yeah, so you are a sociology student here at UBC, as am I.
Indeed.
And you are currently a research assistant with one of the sociology profs here.
Yes.
And you are planning on going to grad school.
I am indeed.
And doing your thesis on what you call the sisterhood wound.
Yeah.
So I was hoping that we could talk about a little bit of that today. So can you define the sisterhood wound?
Yeah, so I think at this point we haven't started the formal research yet, but we have been, I've gotten to do a lot of circles with women since October, and we've done about 6 or 7 beautiful circles where I've gotten to really lean into areas of density with all sorts of women in this stage of life, and it's been really amazing. So essentially at this point, the sisterhood wound is defined as that internalized oppression that originates from the patriarchy and the ways that women have internalized it and then weaponized it with each other through processes of relational aggression, such as competition. So like that kind of blueprinted response to compete with each other, to suppress each other, to regulate each other, and to really just dim our light overall and that of those around us. So I really want to know where this wound takes root in young girls and how we can create spaces to empower girls and women to rise above it and rise into our true nature.
Well put. So you brought this concept into my life when we first became roommates.
Mm.
And I found it incredibly freeing to understand where this comes from. So an example of the sisterhood wound would be like getting jealous of another woman for getting a lot of male attention, or feeling competitive in a sphere in which maybe there aren't a lot of women and you are the few there and you're feeling competitive with the woman. And I feel like a lot of times, or sometimes at least, women aren't always leaning into these negative feelings. Mm. They aren't acting on them, but they're there.
Yeah.
And there can be a lot of shame around the presence of these feelings. And so for me, I found that understanding this concept was really freeing because I was like, oh, I don't have to feel so guilty about having any of these thoughts when I'm in, you know, situations in which the sisterhood wound sort of flares up.
Mm-hmm.
Instead, I can just sort of have compassion for myself and be like, okay, well, you know you're never going to act on this.
And you know this is a trauma response,
yeah,
not a selfhood. Because I think it's gotten written into the societal definition of womanhood, which is completely socially constructed, of course, and is just such a wound that we haven't acknowledged. And then when it's not acknowledged, it carries so much shame with it. Mm-hmm. And I think none of us want to be interacting this way. So having that freedom and that radical permission to reprogram that default response is so liberating.
It really is. And so the circles that you've had, I've been lucky enough to be at most of them, are basically just like, why don't you explain in your words, like, what you would describe a sisterhood circle as in relation to the sisterhood wound?
Absolutely. So in a nutshell, they are spaces where we facilitate that radical permission to reprogram the default response.
I'm sorry.
But we're going to break that down.
Yeah.
So essentially, in their most basic form, these are gatherings with other women where we intentionally infuse the space and the interactions that we're having with the permission to really come authentically, come as we are, and uplift and celebrate that oneness that we all share. And of course, I don't think that this wound is specific only to women. And I think this is something that all humans, regardless of gender, suffer from, because that's a system that we're all living within. But of course, I can only speak to the female experience because that's the one I know. So I think within these circles, it's been really beautiful to see women coming together in celebration of each other. And yeah, just an amplification rather than a dimming.
Completely. And I mean, I think it's really important to acknowledge that, like, not just women, like, people of any gender mm-hmm. can feel this way.
Yeah.
But like you said, these circles are focusing on the experience of women and on strengthening the bond of women.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not like in every circle, you know, we're sitting there and saying, well, this woman did this to me and this woman did this to me. Like, that's not what this is.
Mm-hmm.
Each circle has a theme.
Yeah. So this has been a really cool addition to the space. I think it gives us direction and keeps us from getting stagnant with these circles and these spaces. So a few examples of themes we've done so far have been ancestral trauma, the inner child, sensuality. That was a favorite. Mm-hmm. We've talked about the sisterhood wound, of course, specifically. And we've also had a couple of spaces where the theme has been looser and there's been more room to simply be and check in.
Mm-hmm. And I think that, like, what I love so much about these circles is that because everyone's coming in with their own experience, they all are interpreting the initial question that you ask in their own way.
Yeah.
And so everyone is bringing a different, not just the perspective of their experience, but their perspective of how their experience has informed how they're interpreting the question that you've asked.
Yeah. As sociology students, positionality is everything. And I think we both understand that. And it's really, really interesting to see everyone coming from their own background and the way that this wound has haunted them and the amount of healing that they've done and where they've, you know, uncovered the roots in their own life.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really, really beautiful. Everyone contributes something different.
No, it's really cool. Personally, one of my favorites was the generational trauma one.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think that everyone, do you remember the question that you asked?
I can find it. I think there was a few.
There was an initial question. Here, you find it and I'll talk.
Amazing. This is teamwork.
Oh my God, we had the same laugh there. Oh my God, are we becoming one?
We're literally merging into one soul.
That's what happens when you live with someone.
Exactly.
But yeah, so how I interpreted your initial question was, what does it mean to be a woman in your family? What does womanhood mean in your family? And how has, yeah, can you read it?
Yeah, so we had a few prompts. The first one was, in what ways do you feel wounded by the generations before you? And then we had a follow-up, which was, in what ways do you visualize healing these wounds for yourself and for any generations in the future?
Right. So it's such an open-ended question. Like, you know, you could literally talk about, you know, what your family, what your grandmother went through in a war and how that's affected your father and then how that affected you. It doesn't have to be necessarily the women in your family because, like, your womanhood is also so affected by the men in your family.
Absolutely.
Or, you know, the person of any gender in your family. So, but personally, I interpreted the question to mean, what did it feel like? What was it like to be a woman in your family in relation to the other women in your family? Like, how has your womanhood been defined by the other women and how they define their womanhood?
Oh, yeah.
And it was such an interesting thing to think about. And I had never been asked something that prompted me to think about it in those terms. So that was probably my favorite sisterhood circle because people brought so much vulnerability to it. And it wasn't all negative. Like, lots of people talked about, myself included, you know, how amazing the women in their families were. But it wasn't, nothing was one note, you know, it's always so nuanced.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so awesome to be in a group of people who all acknowledge that nuance.
Yeah, I think meeting each other with that spirit of intimate support is just so healing because it feels like a reclamation of our true nature. Mm-hmm. And I think when we think our true nature is this response that draws really from the sisterhood wound, it is just so, so harmful to our ability to connect with each other. And, you know, I don't have a citation for this, but I heard from from my mother the other day, who's a public health nurse, that loneliness is just as bad for you as smoking.
Really?
Yeah. And I truly think that that is something that we can all feel in, you know, the alienation that this wound has brought. Mm. So it's been so beautiful to, yeah, enjoy these spaces and also just to have you in them. And I'm so glad that they've resonated with you.
Oh, my God. So much. All right. I think we're going to take a little break.
Amazing.
And we're going to listen to a song by Girl House. And we'll be right back.
Things started to get so bad, I started praying. I don't believe in God or anything like that. I guess I needed something to get out.
Like that? How about that? Mondays, 5 p.m. Deliberate Noise. Nina Panini, special guest Claire. Local, new, hot, upcoming shows, toilets, friendship. Mondays at 5. CITR. Be there. Be there.
One, two, three.
Be there.
When you join Balloon Club, we guarantee that you will be able to make a balloon poodle within the first day.
Here at the UBC Ant Club, we just like to talk about ants and compare ant farms. It's really cool.
Paperclip Club is all about, well, paperclips mostly.
At Blah Club, you can blah blah, blah 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 blah.
Explosion!
There's only one club worth joining at UBC, and that's CITR 101.9 FM. We got free tickets to shows, whirly pops, professional help in all types of audio engineering, passes to festivals, crazy parties, live band, swag. All types of crazy people. Our programming manager rides a motorcycle. There's freestyle rapping, Nardwar the Human Serviette, the vinyl and record libraries, Discorder magazine, free studio recording, and it sure beats the hell out of Paperclip Club, which is a thing that I just made up because I work at
CITR.
So come check us out on the floor of the Student Union Building. We got all types of crazy shit for you to do. Or check us out online at www.citr.ca.
All right.
Horse Girl, your favorite up-and-coming Chicago-based rock band, plays the Wise Hall on July 15th. You don't want to miss this.
It's us again. So for those of you just tuning in, this is Ruby Raven and
Leva Becci.
And we are roommates and we are hilarious and adorable as all friends.
Of course.
And we were just talking about Leva's graduate thesis, which is on the sisterhood wound. Mm. It was super interesting, and I hope that you got to listen to it because Leva's very articulate and explains it very well.
My heart.
So now we're going to do something a little lighter. All friends have a list of things that their friends say that they think are hilarious that they write in their phone.
And if you don't, you're lame. Get on our level.
But also, like, people have been like, Ruby, you have to hear it. This is so funny. And they'll read me, like, 15 quotes.
Mm-hmm.
And then they'll be like, okay, so she was like, the dog ran out of the house. Okay, you had to be there. The next one is, the pizza's too big. Oh, okay, you need context for that.
Yeah.
Every time. And like, so maybe listeners are not going to find this funny, but Leva and I think these are hilarious.
Yeah.
So we're gonna say them. So Leva, what are some things I've said that you've recorded on your phone?
Okay, so what's excellent about this is we have them as little conversation snippets. So we'll give you enough context so that these really stick out to you. So the note is called Conversations with Ruby.
Oh, I didn't know that.
You got your own note. So I've lived with Ruby since August, and in that time, I've gotten to know her. She's got a flair for the dramatic. She's a natural comedian. She keeps me on my toes, laughing at all hours of the day. So for this, I'm very thankful. So one time I asked Ruby, I believe we were studying at the time, but I said to her, do you need something? And she goes, only the spotlight.
Which is true.
Which
I went out and got my own show.
Yeah, look at her now. She's on air, baby.
I'm nothing if not reliable.
She makes good on her promises. This is possibly one of my favorites. While we were studying, Ruby and I are both sociology students, mm-hmm. and we took an amazing class with Becky Ross last semester, Sociology of Sexualities, or SOCI 369, for those of you who know your course codes. And while studying, I asked Ruby, is there anything else we need to talk about? And she goes, yeah, your mom. Which I just think speaks for itself.
Sandra is amazing. Sandra was just visiting.
She was. She slept over.
And she is amazing, and I do really like her.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
Well.
So I really just wanted to talk about her. I wasn't even trying to make a early 2000s reference to anything.
No, absolutely not.
I just was like, how's she doing?
Just want to keep up with the fam, you know?
Yeah.
Last of all, and actually I rescind my previous statement. This might be my favorite. I was messaging a boy, and I said to Ruby, he wrote me a full citation. And Ruby goes, for you, that's basically sending nudes. Which I just think is so fantastic because it's true.
It's so true. Like, that's a love language.
You want to woo me? That's yeah, how you do it.
You cite me.
Yeah, exactly. Amazing. That's just a few snippets. Sorry, we're having...
I'm like communicating with her to like get back from the mic a little bit.
Yeah. Okay, sorry. I was no, too
no, the
close.
First, the first time I was like right up here. I was talking so oh. because I really want to be close to the mic.
But I was overeager.
No. But that's also like I did that too because you. That's what you see the movies, and I'm also you have such a desire to be.
Yeah, and I'm a singer, and I always got told when I was performing when I was younger to get really close to the mic.
Get really close to the mic.
Do a little ASMR.
Hey, how are you today?
Okay, we're done. Sorry. We're done.
We're done with that now.
Yeah.
Okay, so I guess to resume the sisterhood wound conversation.
Oh my gosh, to come back.
I'm wondering, just as a little refresher, what is the sisterhood wound?
So the sisterhood wound, for those of you who missed it last period, we're basically defining it right now as that internalized oppression that women feel that stems from the patriarchy, and it's the ways that we weaponize that internalized oppression with each other. Mm-hmm. And so those processes of relational aggression that come from this weaponization, to put in plain English, are competition, suppression, mm-hmm. regulation. We feel this need to dim our light and to dim the light of other women.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I'm wondering, before we were sort of talking about like the feeling of, you know, having those feelings come up, not always acting on them, but feeling guilty for feeling those.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering, like, kind of putting you on the spot here, but if you ever had an experience with a woman that was, like, so lovely because you felt like she went against the sisterhood wound has told us to act like. And, I mean, like, I don't even know that I can think of one right off the top. I definitely have had hundreds of experiences like that. But I'm just wondering, like, if any come to mind.
Yeah, actually, the first one that came to mind when you asked the question was last year, I was a student in the Urban Ethnographic Field School hosted by the ANSO department, the Anthropology and Sociology department at UBC. And during those 6 weeks that I was doing that intensive, I felt so fearful of taking up space, intellectual space, emotional space, the space to speak. And I remember a few times I shared something that really resonated with everyone. And instead of tearing me down, all the other women in this course absolutely celebrated my contributions. And it was such an opposite response to what I was expecting. And you know how we add disclaimers to everything that we say women?
I was just talking about this in that room yesterday at work.
No way.
Women are always like, I think that, or they go, or whatever. Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah. We trail off. Mm-hmm. We don't finish our thoughts. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I think those disclaimers, I was so, so married to them, and I could not let them go. And the other women in this class kept correcting me. No, you don't need to apologize. No, you don't need to qualify that. And it was so beautiful. They were just encouraging me to own my... Can we swear here? Probably
only,
not.
Only after 9 o'clock. I know.
Own my shiz.
I'm always accidentally swearing on air. I'm like,
I mean,
oh,
you're wow.
But it's fine. So if it happens, it happens. It's not the end of the world.
We can censor ourselves.
Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, I think that was the first experience that came to my head. What about you, Ruby? I'm so curious. Do you have any experiences where you felt so uplifted and so supported by other women?
I think just times in which I am in a situation where I feel vulnerable because I don't know anyone. Mm. And this is not always women, but a lot of the time it is sort of notice me. And I try to do this with other people too. Mm-hmm. And you know, come talk to me and understand that I may be nervous or feeling uncomfortable and mm-hmm. open up the circle and include me. Because I feel like, especially in Vancouver, there's this culture of exclusivity and I'm only going to talk to people that I know.
Totally.
So it can be uncomfortable when you're like at a party and like one friend brought you, but it's like all their friends or something like that.
Totally.
So I really appreciate the generosity of inclusiveness from women. I think that, because it's women who notice, in my experience, who notice that. And also queer men, in my experience.
Yeah, I know. We have a friend, actually, who calls it being received generously. Shout out to Kat. And I really do think that that's what it is. And it's this open-heartedness and this tenderness, which I have to say, Ruby, you possess in spades.
Oh, thank you. I try so hard because I know it's like this – it's such a scared feeling in those situations. Like a hollowness Like, I just feel, I feel like I leave myself a little bit and I'm not myself. Like, I can't be myself because I'm so nervous.
Yeah, we talk a lot in sisterhood circles about being embodied and what that means. And I think that that really can stem from being kind to one another and allowing ourselves to drop back into our highest nature.
And two words that you use a lot, which I appreciate, because these are not words that I generally used before I started spending a lot of time with you.
I'm trying to guess what they're going to be.
Okay, can you guess?
I'm going to guess alignment, density, and embodiment.
Okay, I was going to say embodiment and agentic.
Okay, awesome.
Which are very similar to what you just said. So I'm wondering if you can define what it means to be embodied, and then directly after that, what it means to be agentic.
Absolutely. So bearing in mind that I'm at the beginning of my research, so these are not necessarily sociologically sound definitions, but here's what we've got so far. So this is the starting point.
And this is also like what your definition is for yourself when you say this, right? It doesn't have to be like Webster's dictionary.
Exactly. And I think it's important to note that I came to this project personally. I came as a sister, as a seeker, as a friend, and as a human being. And now coming to it as a sociologist is an added bonus, the cherry on top. So personally, I defined embodiment as feeling dropped into the breath, one with mind and body, and operating from a place of groundedness and a place of authenticity and integrity. Because, you know, when you're in a situation you feel like you're betraying yourself actively, I think embodiment is really a guard against that. And it really allows us to question whether or not the situation that we're in and the way we're responding to it is true to who we know ourselves to be.
And by betraying yourself, I think you mean, like, not that I'm trying to explain it to you, but that I think, like, sometimes these terms, at least for me, I needed to be around them a little while to truly understand what they meant. But my understanding of that is when you're in a situation and you're feeling, like I was just describing, maybe you're at a party and you're feeling scared and you don't feel like you can be yourself. And so you sort of put on a show and do something that you wouldn't normally feel comfortable doing.
Yeah. Chameleoning for the benefit of others.
Yes.
Yeah.
Or as a way to protect yourself from feeling vulnerable in a situation.
Yes, that's a great addition. Yeah. So that would be my working definition of embodiment. And then as for what it means to be agentic and to have agency, this is actually a really wonderful word that I learned from reading a study last year. And it introduced the concept of the agentic body, the idea that the body can be a tool of communication that allows us to reclaim our power. And so from there, I have been really enjoying the word agentic as a way of describing describing just how we're operating and where we are gathering our permission to be and to show up in life from. I use this word a lot in the dating sphere, which I know we talk about over dinner sometimes in the kitchen. And I do find that it's been really helpful for me because I think, especially as a woman, keep talking about gender, especially as a woman, it can feel like I am destined to just wait around and be chosen. And I think that that is such an old world idea, obviously, but it's still so stamped into the way that we interact in as a woman in this world. And so, yeah, I've been really enjoying bringing the agency back, reclaiming it for myself, and taking moves that are bold and decisive.
I love it. And I also want to note, like, as much as we're talking about feeling like this and, you know, being embodied and feeling agentic, like, it's not like we have this down pat.
Definitely
and
not.
And it's not like we've transcended. I mean, we're 20 years old.
Yeah.
Like, we're riddled with insecurity. Like,
if you figure it out, please do let us know.
Yeah.
Give us a ring.
It's like, I feel like sometimes there's so much conversation about stuff like this without the flip side of the reality of why we need to talk about this sort of stuff.
Totally.
And the reality is we need to have these conversations to remind ourselves that, like, this is our end goal and this is obviously where we want to be. And also my mother is constantly reassuring me that by the time I'm, like, 40 – a lot of these insecurities will have melted away. Hopefully not all of them, but a lot of the smaller ones and the uncertainties will have melted away with maturity and age and confidence and experience. But for now, I think that we're just trying to remember to practice what we're preaching.
Totally.
But just because we're preaching it doesn't mean that we're always perfectly practicing it, because we're definitely also not 20-year-old women just trying to get by.
Yeah, and I think it's been so beautiful to live together and to learn how to be in sisterhood and how to set our boundaries and how to be agentic and embodied in all of those decisions and in all of these spheres. And I think at its best, it's been a really wonderful way for us to negotiate being 20 and being women and all these societal norms and temporal scripts that we all have to, just make our peace with. So very grateful for that.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, we're going to take another break now with a song, and Leva and Ruby will be right on back. Wait, I was trying to lead in, but I wasn't. Okay, we'll be all right back.
Sending memos from their offices, don't think so much. Now I left my wallet drunk in a taxi cab. It was an excellent reminder of his ways. When I sobered up, I knew I fucked up. It was too little too late. I got locked up and I smiled so lonely. Somebody hold me. Get your crowbar. As if I had less time, you never get rid of me. Did you enjoy yourself? Did you have a nice time? Did you treat somebody well? Or if somebody was yourself, did you feel alive? Another meal at the drive-thru. That's it this week. Right up an IOU. I stepped into the game without knowing the rules, but I gotta make my way through. Say you got money in the bank, big house and a cat. What good is that? You still look like that. Smile so lonely. Somebody hold me. So get your crowbar. As if I had a nice time, you never get rid of me. Did you enjoy yourself? Did you have a nice time? Did you treat somebody well? Or if somebody was yourself, did you just toe the line? Did you enjoy yourself? Did you have a nice time? Did you treat somebody well? Or were you stuck inside your shell?
Megamall's debut EP, Escape from Lizard City, goes live this Thursday, June 30th at the release show with fellow rockers Anodyne at the Lido. The show is free and music starts at 8 p.m. See you there. I see the love thinking over time.
Are you an artist, or do you work within the music community in BC? New grants could be available for you. Creative BC has launched three programs funding Indigenous and underrepresented artists and organizations: the Demo Recording, Music Video, and Industry Catalyst programs. Previously, for artists and industry living and working in Vancouver, these programs have been extended across the entire province of BC. Past recipients include KPOC, Prado, AfroVan Connect, Capsule Studios, and 120 other projects that have been funded. Apply by June 23rd, 2022. For more information, be sure to check out creativebc.com. You get me talking
when I'm drinking. All right.
We're back.
We're back. It's us. It's Ruby and Leva from... I'm not going to say our street name because one time I was at the gallery and this creepy guy got mad at me when I didn't tell him my address.
Oh my God, this story infuriates me.
I literally,
Let's not
dredge it back up. Anyway.
We're only positive energy.
We're positive here. But yeah, for those of you who are just joining us.
Welcome.
Welcome. I'm Ruby Raven. I normally have my show, Not My First Schmodio, with an exclamation point this hour. But my guest, sadly... came down with a cold that's possibly COVID. We hope she gets better. She'll be on July 21st, Allie Froggett. But for today, I thought I would do a fill-in with my roomie/bestie, Leva Becci. Hello.
Hello. So honored to be here.
And we're doing a fill-in partially because this was going to be my first live show, and I was really nervous about all the clickety-clackety, like, tech stuff. So this gave me an opportunity to just some low-stakes practicing with the tech.
Totally.
And it has been fun, and I feel like a badass for like knowing all the tech stuff.
She's doing so good, guys. I mean, oh, so good.
Thank you, Leva. There were some fumbles,
but nothing your grace could not accommodate.
Nothing I couldn't. Beyonce at the Super Bowl, you know, when she falls and then she catches herself. I basically did that.
Yeah.
But just for a little ad for my show, Not My First Schmodio airs Thursdays at 8 p.m. I interview a local Vancouver comedian, a local expert in the community. Next week, I will have on one of the chief of the health region for the city, Mr. Brad Tompkins. He'll be on to talk about the new public washrooms ban happening in the city. And then I will be the Schmoment with Allie Froggett, the comedian. The Schmoment is where we share a time we've embarrassed ourselves in public. And I do it almost too constantly. So this really is my movement.
It's her brand.
Leva knows that I embarrass myself all the time.
Am I supposed to agree with that? Am I allowed?
So I'm really just trying to normalize embarrassing yourself in public. I can't believe this cause isn't taken.
We had to destigmatize it.
We really do. It's really important.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's my show. Please tune in Thursdays at 8 p.m. Also, if you're just interested in comedy happening in the city, it's a great way to like learn about what's going on and the scene that's happening.
There's a whole underground scene that only since moving in with you, Ruby, have I had any clue what's going on. Like, I've gone to these amazing improv shows that Ruby does, and they're amazing. And I can't believe that they're just so underground. So Ruby is bringing them out into the light.
That is what I'm doing on the show. Yeah, because I was talking to some comedians in the city, and they were really talking about how the pandemic killed their emerging scene. So I'm hoping to sort of, you know, get in the ground floor right when it's being rebuilt.
Reigniting it.
Are your parents listening?
I don't know. I texted them because I think it would be fun if they tuned in. Oh, my dad is listening. Hey, Dad.
Oh, my God. Hi, Fazina.
That's so fun.
Yeah. So we were talking about earlier in the show, Leva's thesis paper that she's writing about.
Yes, my undergraduate thesis.
The sisterhood wound.
Mm.
And we were talking about the sisterhood circles and how powerful they were, how powerful I find them, and just how needed they are. Like, I find that when women are leaving these circles, they are so thankful for you, and there's such a sense of release, you know, as intense as they are emotionally for all of us.
Mm.
I can see how powerful they are for the women that join. And I'm wondering if you can, I don't know, share some some moments that you enjoyed from the circles. I mean, they are pretty anonymous. You know, we do like to keep the magic within, but I just feel like because we've explained so much about the sisterhood wound and the research that you've just begun doing, if just to sort of give an example of what these sisterhood circles look like, if you could share some of your favorite moments.
Absolutely. So if you're just joining us, I'll nutshell the sisterhood wound for you really quickly. So the research is only beginning now, but essentially the sisterhood wound is currently understood as the ways that women internalize patriarchal oppression and weaponize it with each other through processes of relational aggression like competition, suppression, and regulation. So essentially all the ways we dim our light and the ways we dim other women's light as this like response, kind of blueprinted response. So something that I've loved from the sisterhood circles is the way that we close. And typically we love to gather for some heart to source prayer, as we've coined it. I think prayer can be a triggering word for some, which I totally understand. And I love reclaiming it through this beautiful closing and sealing of the space. So the one that really stands out to me was during the end of our ancestral trauma circle. And it's a really beautiful time to get creative with prayer and offer, whether it's like words of gratitude or an intention or a little, you know, a little love letter to the creator. I think it was a really, really beautiful time. And so for the ancestral trauma, we thought it would be really cool if we offered a little spoken letter to loved ones who may no longer be with us in this realm. And we had some really, really touching prayers. Are there any that stand out to you?
Well, one of our good friends, her father had just passed. And so she had mentioned him and had mentioned her excitement for when she has children and seeing him in her children. And I think that that just got all of us because we all thought of our own fathers, I think, in that moment.
Yeah, for sure. My father's listening right now.
That was not intentional.
No.
But yeah, that one was really powerful because I think we all, because we had just spent like an hour and a half connecting, we had all become connected to her and her pain in that moment. Yeah. So when we did that prayer, we all were bawling. And, you know, a lot of the women in the circle are not religious or they're, you know, they're not a part of your faith, but the prayer was so beautiful and it resonated with all of us that by the end we were all like shedding tears.
It was really unifying. Yeah. And I think that's what prayer does. I think it transcends any of these divisions that we have created within our society today. And I think it's really, really beautiful to share that with friends and to bring that intention into spaces like this one. And honestly, I think we all just had that moment together and we all had a hand on our friend and everyone just kind of took a moment and it was really, really special.
Totally. So we've had a couple of these sisterhood circles now and I've loved every single one that I've been a part of, but we've been having some conversations about including some people of other genders into these circles. Because as amazing as they are with women, as you were saying earlier, everyone is affected by the system that we're in, not just women. And
absolutely.
So I'm wondering like what you think the benefit of a circle with all genders can have.
Yeah. So I think in a nutshell, and again, this is not yet research based, but in a nutshell, my hypothesis is that men are schooled to suppress, and that's the major way that they are harmed by the system, is they're schooled to suppress. Trans and non-binary people are schooled to conform, and they are told that there's only two boxes, and if you don't fit, then there's nowhere you belong. And women, I think, suffer on all those levels that we were talking about before, this competition, suppression, regulation. And so I think including all genders into a space like this would be such a beautiful opportunity to see how we can find synergy and come together to heal at the same time. Because I think none of these wounds are like live in isolation, right? They don't exist on, I don't know what the word I'm looking for is. In a vacuum, exactly. And I think that that would be really cool to see how they intertwine and how we can possibly tease them apart and find healing as a collective. Because that's what we are. We're a human family.
I think also too, like, we spend a lot of time with other women, at least the circles we run in,
yeah,
you know, unpacking what it means to be a woman in the world,
mm-hmm.
and understanding each other's journeys as best we can. But with men, I don't, at least the men that I've been around, they're not necessarily socialized to do that in the same way.
Mm-hmm.
And so also it's harder for people of other genders to understand the experience of men, or for men to understand the experience of women, or non-binary people, or
yeah,
for anyone who doesn't live in their experience to understand other people's experience. So I think that in a larger group of people, getting to share what it's like to be their gender in the world,
yeah,
is going to be beneficial to everyone.
Definitely.
And an opportunity to discover things that, like, you would sort of maybe never feel comfortable asking or never think to ask. I know personally, like, I was telling my brother about the sisterhood circles, and he was like, can I come to one? Like, every guy who you tell this to is always joking like that. And I go, oh, you know, Leva's actually going to have one with all genders. So, yeah, I would love that. And he was like,
It's a lot of courage. I really acknowledge that when people come into these spaces. I think it's really remarkable.
Yeah. But I would love for him to come. Because, you know, I definitely think him and all men are carrying, you know, their own baggage of what it means to be a man in the world. So I think it would be super beneficial. But I could see in him, like, he was like, well, I wouldn't know where to even start with that sort of thing. So I'm really excited for that one, but also nervous.
Yeah, me too, to be honest. I think space holding is such a delicate task, and it really requires me to have a good handle on what everyone needs and how to support the space best without mm-hmm. kind of being overbearing. Mm. So yeah, that'll be an interesting adventure, and I'm really looking forward to seeing when we can pull that one together.
Me too. All right, Leva, we've come to the end of our hour. Can you believe an hour went by?
No.
It does not be like that.
Oh my gosh. We should do this all the time.
But this is the end of my fill-in. I'm so glad that we had this opportunity. I hope that the woman I was supposed to interview heals up, but also...
Yeah, we send you healing energy.
Energy, Allie. But I'm also so glad that we got to do this. Leva, I love you.
I love you, Ruby.
And till next time, because we'll definitely be doing this again.
See you soon.
Bye.